You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters.
Today, I'm talking to Jonathan Watts, the CEO and co-founder, along with Tim Spector and George Hadjigeorgiou of Zoe, the world's largest scientific study of nutritional responses. Jonathan, welcome to Table Talk.
Pleasure to be here.
Can you start off by just explaining what the Zoe project is?
So Zoe is a nutritional science company, and our mission is to try and ensure that everybody can eat with confidence by understanding their own responses to food. And so what does that mean practically? What that means is that we are going to be delivering an app that anyone can download and give them their own individual responses to food, and where they can do a series of tests which allow them to improve the accuracy of the predictions of those responses. And that is built on what is the largest nutritional science study in the world, which we started in the UK, is continuing in the US, and actually will just continue to grow as we launch the product, because everybody who chooses to participate in Zoe is actually choosing not only to get their own responses, but also share this information with the rest of the community in order to improve the results for everybody. It allows you to move from a point where you just don't understand what you should eat to a point where you actually really understand how your own body responds to food, and where the really deep insight that's come out of the science of the last few years is that your response to food and my response to food are different. And therefore, there is no one-size-fits-all diet. We need to understand what is right for us. And once you do that, then yes, you're able to eat with confidence, and you're also able to cut through, I think, this huge complexity when you look at all the food that's out there and you see all these things, and every food, no matter what it is, there's one thing about it that's good, and it can leave you in a point where you're like just lost and confused.
And so does that mean that you are a data company? Are you creating a framework of nutritional advice, or are you knocking out protein bars?
So we're definitely not going to be knocking out protein bars. Fundamentally, what we're about is understanding your individual responses to food and being able to explain those to you so that you can live your life with much more confidence about how you respond to food. And the reason why we think that's important is we basically believe that for most of us, the food that you eat is the most important medicine that you take. And yet, we really have no understanding about how we respond. And many of us, I think, are very confused because we hear conflicting advice, be that changes in sort of government advice over the last 40 years, or just whatever you happen to read on the internet today that often tells you the reverse of what you read on the internet yesterday.
Now, quite a few of our listeners are food industry professionals. Now, I would imagine half of those people are saying, oh my gosh, this is fascinating stuff. And half of them are thinking, hang on, I'm manufacturing food. Is this important? But this is a crucial leap forward in nutritional understanding, isn't it? After the gut biome, the mapping of the gut biome and the emergence of the research saying how important it is to our health. This is going to become crucial in how people make food choices and what they're actually going to buy and consume in the future. Is that right? That's
certainly our belief. I think that there's a big change going on in terms of how people think about food, and indeed about how nutritional scientists think about food and how we respond to nutrition. And in a way, this all started with the genetic revolution 20 years ago, with the realization that we could decode the human genome, and suddenly you can start to think about individuals and their genetics rather than just thinking about, everybody is basically the same, and maybe you would distinguish between someone being old and young and male or female. Now, that has turned out to be much harder to translate into action than I think many people thought. And indeed, the study that we have just completed, which was called Predict One and is the largest nutritional study of its kind in the world, showed that even identical twins respond very differently to the same food. And so what that tells you is it's not so surprising that trying to solve this problem through genetics has been hard, because luckily we are a lot more than just our genes. And I think that's a great message, because it says, our mom and dad gave us our genes, right? We're stuck with them. And there's, I think, been this really depressing idea that maybe just everything that happens to you was preordained at the point you're born and there's nothing you can do. And I think what is really sort of cheering is that this big study that was done on over 1,000 individuals showed that even identical twins, when we fed them these standardized meals that were identical, you could see these very big variations. And there are a number of things that explain that, but one of the things that is important, we believe, is the gut microbiome, the billions of bacteria that are inside us. And what we found is that actually even identical twins, their gut microbiomes are very, very different. They're almost as different. They're almost, you know, they're really no more similar than your gut microbiome and mine. So even though you have exactly the same genes, you have all these bacteria inside you that have 1,000 times as many genes inside them, and they're completely varied. And this is one of the reasons, alongside differences in what we eat and how we exercise and so on, that explain why we end up with these very different metabolic responses. And I think it's a long answer to your question, but I think people are more and more interested in understanding, okay, what's the right thing for me across our life? And what's exciting is that there's a whole set of new digital devices mainly that allow us for the first time to start to understand our individual responses.
And this is why nutrition is just a flipping nightmare, isn't it? Because as you say, twins have different responses to different nutritional inputs. And added to that, there's the difficulty of running long-term double-blind placebo-controlled trials on nutrition because, you know, in 10 years' time, what's your response going to be to eating a bag of chips tomorrow? It's such a complex area. How are you going about dealing with all the data?
So it's a great question, and I think it's not quite as bad as you just suggest. You know, when you hear that, it makes you think, wow, none of this can be solved. I would say more the reverse, which is until now that has been very hard, and things have really changed just over the last couple of years. And I think Zoe comes out of that. And so we're working with many of the world's leading researchers to carry out this sort of new concept of a scientific study, one which can go to much, much larger numbers than a historical study would have done. And that's because we're going to be engaging directly with consumers and allowing them effectively to sort of participate in science in order to improve their own understanding of their bodies, but also to improve the understanding of everybody else. And the reason why you can do that is because there's a whole set of digital devices that just didn't exist until very recently. The most obvious one is the phone that everybody carries around with them, which allows you to log accurately exactly what you can eat, and now has, you know, a barcode scanner on it. It records the time. It has a camera that allows you to take photos and share those with nutritionists. But you can also pair that with a whole set of other digital devices. You know, the one that many of us are familiar with is, you know, some sort of step tracker, which allows you to understand exercise, allows you to understand sleep. But the other device, which is newer, and you know, people are probably not so familiar with it today, is something called a continuous glucose monitor that allows you to actually measure the way that your blood sugar is changing, you know, minute to minute.
I know, I wore one of those. I had one of those for a TV series last year, and it's the data you get is extraordinary. And what's amazing is you can't fiddle with it. You know, it's not something where you maybe I won't put in the chocolate bar I had into the phone app. It's tracking what you're doing, and I think tools like that are extraordinary, aren't they?
So all of the, absolutely. And these are just examples, I think, of the way in which all of these new devices are now available. And I think the other key tool is machine learning, which we all hear a lot about, because all of this huge amount of data has been created. You know, historical methods to use this, you wouldn't know what to do. If you walked into your doctor and said, look, here's all this data over the last, you know, 2 weeks of what I've been eating, they'd be like, that's great, but I don't know what to do with it. What machine learning allows us to do is take all the data that you create, combine it with the data of thousands of other people, and then pick through that to understand the patterns and therefore be able to predict not just how you responded to the food you might have happened to eat, but actually how you would respond to any food. And the core concept of Zoe is to really combine this digital data, machine learning, really the best science from researchers all over the world to be able to predict your own responses and then just deliver that in a very simple way. Because obviously at the end of the day, what you want to know is, well, how will I respond to food? What is the right food for me? And so from food manufacturers, you know, a lot of this we believe puts power, you know, into the consumer's hand for them to understand actually this is the sort of food that's right for me and this is what's not right for me, and to make it much easier for them to judge because again, you know, I think food manufacturers, you know, are pulled around often by the legislation about what's on, you know, the back of the pack or whatever. The reality is the back of the pack is, or even the front of the pack is very confusing. And really what you want is to just know, like, you know, what's the right food for me? That's good for me. That's not so good. And then you should be free to decide what you want to do, but at least you've got that information.
So what is your dream of this? I mean, are we going to solve some of humanity's nutritional problems? Are you going to sort of give a roadmap out of obesity? What do you believe is the potential from your work?
There's no doubt that, you know, a big part of what drives this, and I think drives a lot of the scientific engagement as well, is there's a really big problem. So if you just, you know, take America, for example, there's about 160 million Americans who are overweight or obese, and there are more than 100 million of those people with nutrition-related diseases. And so obviously diabetes, heart disease, these are the things that we hear about most often. And it's not a secret that this has been accelerating rapidly, and that we're seeing exactly the same rise, you know, even in countries that are not yet rich. So if you look at China or Mexico, you're seeing exactly the same thing. And I think that, you know, there's been a lot of suggestion that all of this is just because people are sort of making bad choices or they have bad willpower. You know, it's all just very simple. All you have to do is just, you know, count your calories and everything was solved. We don't really believe that. We think that that actually the food that we eat is a big part of the reason why we're having these issues. And if we can understand personalized responses and therefore give you guidance that really allows you to optimize how to deal with that, yes. It doesn't mean, obviously, that we will solve all of these problems. These are complex problems, but actually we can make a real difference. And also for many people who, you know, don't have diabetes, but are, you know, every day trying to make food choices and trying to decide to eat the right thing. And I think, you know, in our world, you have to work really hard to eat the right thing, right? We're surrounded at every point, you know, and within 15 seconds with something which we're pretty confident if we ate all the time is going to leave us in really bad shape. And yet we're all pretty confused. And I think all the messages over the last few years, but probably only increasing the confusion as they focus on, oh, well, now you have to eat more protein, or you have to, you know, fat is bad for you. Oh, actually, fat is good for you. Oh, you know, you shouldn't eat eggs. Oh, eggs are great. Oh, no, they're bad again. All of this leads you, I think, in a point where it's hardly surprising. It's just like, fine, I'll just eat the entire, you know, set of food on offer at Starbucks.
Well, I'm really excited to find out what's going to happen. I'm looking forward to the start of next year. And thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. I'm Jonathan Wolfe, co-founder and CEO of Zoe. Thank you so much for joining us.
Now we're joined by Professor Tim Spector, Professor of Genetic Epidemiology and Director of the Twins UK Registry from King's College London. He's a hugely respected researcher and author of the best-selling The Diet Myth. His new book is called Spoonfed: Why Almost Everything We've Been Told About Food Is Wrong. Welcome, Tim.
Hello there.
The project that you've been working on as another project of your many is the Zoe project, which goes back to the complexities of nutrition and complexities of different bodies coping with different substances. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And does that fit in very much with the notions behind Spoonfed?
It does. These studies started 3 years ago, really, when I was starting to write Spoonfed, and I got together with these two entrepreneurs who've been working on the internet, using algorithms and the internet for advertising. They wanted to do some good in their lives. The guys in Zoe raised money so we could do some really major studies in nutrition in order to collect individual level data that we could use for personalizing nutrition. So what we did is we started with 1,000 people, mainly twins in the UK and a few in the US, and gave them identical meals and followed them for 2 weeks using every medical device we could and measuring everything in them, including stool samples to look at their gut microbes and sugar monitors, exercise monitors, sleep, etc. And what we showed initially really blew me away, because with an identical muffin and milkshake, these 1,000 people had eightfold difference in their blood responses. These were all normal people. Mm. And so for the first time, we're saying, wow, you know, and then we not only was that eightfold difference, we also saw that in identical twins. So you'd expect two genetic clones to have virtually the same responses. And it turned out that no two people really responded to sugars, fats, and inflammation in the same way. And suddenly that was a real aha moment. So, well, if identical twins were different, what about all of us? You know, so how can we then start tailoring how we respond to certain foods in a way that would help us long term by reducing these peaks in our glucose levels, our fat levels, and inflammation, which would allow the body to have much less stress on it long term. And that's what we've done. We've now increased the numbers to about 4,000 people, and we now have an algorithm that about 80% success, how you're going to react to any other food once you've done this starting test. And we now give an app that gives all your foods a rating from 0 to 100 in terms of for you personally on how good that is going to be for your metabolism. And you can use the app to design your own food plans, etc. And we've just started a small level doing this commercially in the US, and it's going to be in the UK sometime early next year. But it's a very new approach about it, because we don't talk about calories at all. And it's very much getting people used to thinking about food in a different way, about how it might, you know, engage with their own bodies rather than just eating it because it's available and it's filling. But we hope to increase the diversity of what people eat. So most diets are restrictive. And I think the approach here is that, you know, every time you eat something, it might give you 10 other alternatives that you have thought about eating. That to increase the range of what people eat, because we know that the greater the range of plants you eat, that actually the side effect is your gut health is very much better. You get more microbes, and your metabolism and your immunity are much better. So, you know, we're hoping this is going to be, it will take off in a big way and really start a new revolution about personalizing our nutrition in the future, which at the moment you can only do with sort of self-experimentation, which, you know, you have to do a lot of to be sure what's going on, unless you're one of those people who has a dramatic, you know, response to fats or sugars. It's quite hard to tell without the technology.
Yeah. So do you think that's possibly a solution to the oversimplification, the bundling of lies and mantras and cliches, to throw that out and to have an app tell you what you are likely? I presume you have to feed it some information to begin with. Is it sort of stool sample information and gut microbiome analysis, and then put your trust in the app rather than in the mantras that idiot TV presenters.
Yeah. Well, I think that's right. I think this is the era of big data. And when you've got so much data that you can't really make head or sense of it as an individual, you need these algorithms to tell us what's going on. And this is the modern world. You know, many of the things we take for granted now, like maps, and it's all done through algorithms, because individually we couldn't make those decisions. And so I think this is the future, that it is so complicated that you need machines to do this for you and then transform it back into something simple that, you know, is free of commercial sponsorship or, you know, politics. And so hopefully these apps will become, you know, your trusted guide, your Google guide, your Wikipedia, whatever it is that you think is relatively free, and you can make your own decisions based on that when you go shopping, rather than, you know, what the big companies or supermarkets want you to buy.
If it stops TV presenters saying words like good, honest food and people taking that away as the truth, then I'll be a buyer. Well, good luck with the book. I look forward to chatting to you again. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters with Professor Tim Spector. And we've been talking about his new book, Spoon Fed, Why Almost Everything We've Been Told About Food Is Wrong. Go and buy a copy now if you can find one. Tim, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Following the recent findings from PREDICT, the latest detailed study into the gut microbiome, we catch up with Dr. Sarah Berry, reader in nutritional sciences from King's College London. Hello there, Sarah.
Hi, Stefan.
Now, the PREDICT study you've worked on alongside Tim Spector. Can you, first of all, just tell us a little bit about the PREDICT study? What is it? What is it looking for?
Absolutely. So it's actually part of a whole programme of research consisting of a number of PREDICT studies. So the PREDICT 1, the PREDICT 2 and the PREDICT 3 studies. We recently completed and published two papers in Nature Medicine on the PREDICT 1 study, which I think is, like you said, what we'll talk mainly about today, particularly in relation to the microbiome. But there is a lot more to come from our PREDICT 2 and PREDICT 3 work as well. So the PREDICT 1 study was specifically designed to answer really three key questions that are really important and particularly timely now in the whole landscape of where nutritional research is going. And this was to look at how much variability there is in how people respond to food, which is around this whole area of precision nutrition and personalized nutrition. And then secondly, to look at what's determining this variability between individuals and also within an individual, i.e. day to day. So is it due to our genes? Is it due to our microbiome? Is it due to our age? Is it due to what we're eating? Or is it due to how we're eating? You know, what time of day we eat, sleep, etc. And then thirdly, can we predict our responses to food? So can we use some really novel technologies, use machine learning and AI to actually build prediction models to predict for each individual person how they might respond to a given food? And quite uniquely, in terms of research, it combines very traditional academia, so researchers like myself, and then Zoe, who are a startup tech company who are formed specifically for the purpose of these PREDICT studies. Because of the scale and the breadth of the study and this multidisciplinary team that I mentioned, unlike other studies, which can tend to be very narrow in their approach when they're trying to look at how different variables might affect our responses to food, our PREDICT studies explore the many interrelated determinants of how we respond to food, as well as the many different outcomes. So, for example, we've looked at all the pieces of the puzzle as to how we eat impacts our response, what we eat impacts our response, who we are impacts our response, our genes and our microbiome. And we've measured this using a very robust dietary human study and the most advanced technologies and multi-omics to get really in-depth data that we can then use to answer this last question and start to predict how we respond to food.
Now, these concepts of precision nutrition and personalized nutrition have been bandied around in various pseudoscientific terms by SOFA nutritionists. This is not what you're doing here, is it? Can you tell us a bit about your role?
Yeah, totally. So I think perhaps I could just start by really outlining how I view precision nutrition. And explaining the term in this non-pseudoscience way to then be able to put into context what I'm doing on the project. So really simply put, precision nutrition is about nutrition tailored to the individuals. And we're at a really, really exciting time, I think, in the evolution of nutritional research, where we're starting to realise that we need to look beyond the average response. We need to look beyond this one-size-fits-all recommendation. And we need to target nutritional advice at an individual level. And this is because we as humans are really complicated with our thousands of metabolic pathways, and food is really complicated with the thousands of chemicals in each and every food. And if we throw these together, we see that everyone responds hugely differently to the same food. But nutritional research has typically reported the mean response, and guidelines are typically based on the average person at a population level. And so I think, you know, more and more we see nutritional researchers, and this also is the case across, you know, medicine as a whole. We're really realizing we need to look beyond the mean response. We need to strive to deliver advice at an individual level. And to do this, we really must explore just how different our responses are to food and what determines these differences. And this is what I'm doing as part of my role, you know, in the PREDICT study. This research has really come about from a chance meeting between Tim Spector, who you mentioned earlier, and founders of Zoe, George and Jonathan. You know, their combined passion for improving people's health and ensuring that everyone eats for their unique biology was really the kind of idea behind the study. And I got involved really early on in the process. In the early days, so I took a lead alongside Tim in the development of the protocol, really building on my own expertise in the last 20 years in the design and implementation of dietary randomized controlled trials, and also my expertise in postprandial metabolism. And my current role in the PREDICT program spans across all aspects of the studies, alongside a really world-class team of other scientists, ranging from scientists at King's College, in the States, at MGH, Harvard and Stanford, and also in Italy at Trento, and in Sweden at Lund universities. And currently I work on the study design and the implementation of new PREDICT studies, but really importantly also on the interpretation of the results in the context of how we can actually apply this amazing data set we've got to achieve personalized dietary advice that we can actually use and can actually be actionable. And I think this is the really tough part, because it's really important when we're thinking about personalized nutrition that we can develop advice and use our findings to actually result in accessible and simple advice at an individual level. And it's only then that we can actually achieve any sort of meaningful change in health.
And in case any of our listeners are wondering why this is such an exciting outcome, I mean, nutritional research is immensely complex, isn't it? You're having to look at health outcomes related to food intake over a long period of time, and to the exclusion of other. I mean, it's to do it at all is immensely difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really challenging running any kind of nutritional research studies that encompass breadth, depth, and scale. And I think we're actually at really exciting times in the field of nutritional research, because previously as nutritional researchers, we've had the choice really of doing quite small scale studies, but at very high precision. So these might be very small-scale randomized control trials, or we've had the option of running very large-scale studies, but with very low precision. So these would typically be our epidemiology studies, so our big population studies. And really, up until very recently, we've had to choose one approach or the other approach. But what's amazing being a nutritional researcher at the current times is that with the development of all the novel technologies, whether these be mobile phone apps, remote testing abilities, for example, continuous glucose monitors, and also the growing area of citizen science, everyone wants to know, how do I respond to food? What should I eat? Et cetera. We've actually got the opportunity now as nutritional scientists to be able to collect data at a high scale across a whole massive range of different outcomes, but also at depth and also at really high precision. And it's actually once we've collected this kind of data that we can actually really start to unravel all this complexity that I talked about how complicated we are as individuals, how complicated, food is, and really, unravel these many interrelated determinants of how we respond to food. And it's only then that we can actually make personalized nutrition a reality as well.
You said that the PREDICT is about understanding variability in response to food. When you talk about responses, what does that mean? Is it changes in gut flora? Is it health outcomes? What are those responses?
So there's a whole range of responses of how we respond to food. And typically we would separate them into what we call acute, so short-term responses, and chronic, what we would call long-term responses. Now, in our studies, we're measuring both of these. But what we're focusing on, particularly in the PREDICT studies, is what we call postprandial metabolism. And these are these acute short-term changes. And simply put, it's what happens to us when we metabolize a meal. And it's really a measure of the changes in metabolites circulating the blood over that very acute, so maybe a 2 to 8 hour period after eating. And this is something we've been particularly interested in focusing alongside many of these long-term measures, such as the microbiome, or measures about ourselves, whether it be our genetics, etc.
So just to be absolutely clear, the phrase postprandial metabolism means what happens to you after you've eaten a meal.
Definitely. So postprandial means post-meal. And if you want, I can expand on why this is something that we're interested in and why I think it's an important area that we should focus on when we're trying to untangle how we respond to food.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can expand on the impact of it.
Yep. So this is something that I've spent most of the last 20 years of my research career looking at. And the reason that we're interested in postprandial metabolism is because we actually spend most of our day in the postprandial state. And what happens is when we consume a meal containing mixed nutrients, as most meals do, so containing fat, protein and carbohydrate, for example, we have an immediate rise in circulating metabolites. And the ones that we typically measure are glucose and triglycerides. And so when you have carbohydrates in a meal, what happens is you have a short, sharp rise in glucose, which we call glycemia, peaking around 30 minutes, returning to baseline around 2 hours. And then from the fat that's in the meal, you have this much slower, more prolonged rise in circulating triglycerides from the fat in the meal, which reaches a peak around maybe 4 hours and returns to baseline around 8 hours. Now, if you think of those two little peaks that I've described and you map those onto a typical eating day where we consume three main meals and maybe 2 to 3 snacks a day, what happens is therefore you're in this state of metabolic flux throughout the whole day. So you're having this continued short, sharp rises in glucose, this continued elevation of circulating triglycerides in the blood. And these changes are accompanied by changes in circulating mediators, so inflammatory mediators, a change in atherogenic lipids, for example, oxidative stress. And this is really important because the evidence is now showing us that these acute elevations in all of these circulating metabolites are actually independent risk factors for cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and may even predispose to obesity. So when we think about how we respond to food, it's really important that we think of these acute changes alongside many of these long-term changes, because based on my many years of research, I really believe that most of the long-term effects of food are actually due to these very short changes that we see during this postprandial period.
Now, in layman's terms, just to make this absolutely clear, if we understand the variability in responses to foods and we can plot what foods do to us, presumably we should be able to make us healthier or our health outcomes different. We should be able to suppress certain propensities to disease. I mean, the impact could be enormous, couldn't it?
I think so. I think that we need to be mindful of the place for broad population-based guidelines. But within that, there's enormous scope to optimize our health, and there's enormous scope for personalized nutrition. And I think that given that what we've seen with our PREDICT studies is that there's a huge variability in how people respond to food. So, for example, when we look at postprandial triglyceride or we look at postprandial glucose responses, we see that there's about a tenfold difference in how different people respond. So, Stefan, how you might respond to a particular food versus how I might respond is hugely variable. And this is even amongst people that are very healthy. And so we see this massive variability. And what we can then do is we can then start to look at what's determining this variability and how can we modify those determinants to really optimize the subsequent health measures. And I think it's once that we can unravel all of this that we're in a really powerful position to really optimize people's health.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been absolutely fascinating. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from waging war on plastics to clean eating. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.